Well, please turn with me to Daniel chapter 7. Today we are going to start to deal with the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel, and we are going to talk about the times of the Gentiles that is found in chapter 7, just the same like it had been found in chapter 2. And so please turn to chapter 7, and I would like to read, first of all, this chapter. And as we read this chapter, we'll see how it is connected so much with the second chapter of Daniel, which we have already studied. Chapter 7 actually began the prophetic portion of the book of Daniel, even though chapter 1 till chapter 6 have historical history, but with some prophecy. Chapter 7 to the end of Daniel to chapter 12 have prophecy with some history. And so it is very interesting. So let me read chapter 7, first of all, in verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and he told them the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and he said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. I beheld, till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up upon the earth, and made stand upon the feet, as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl, and the beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great thing. I behold, till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. Verse 10. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were open. Behold, then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. Verse 13. And I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came forth with clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, And they brought him near before him, and there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stop with this verse, because this is really where we get the first half of this particular chapter. And I would like to stop here, because we're going to do the reading again next time. But today, I would like really to begin with Daniel chapter 7, verse 1 to 14. Let me just first of all say this. The Daniel chapter 7, if you want to give to this chapter a title, we can give it really two titles. The first title that we can give to this chapter is simply the vision, or the visions of Daniel seeing the four beasts. That can be one of the titles that we can give to this chapter. The second title that we can give to this chapter is the sovereign rule of God over Gentile empires demonstrated again. It was demonstrated before already in chapter 2 that God is sovereign and he's ruling over the affairs of the Gentile empires. The first time we saw it in chapter 2, the second time we see it in chapter 7. In other words, we can see a demonstration of the sovereignty of God over Gentile empires demonstrated a second time in chapter 7. Now, if you remember, and I'm going to do this a little bit this evening so we can see something that will be good for visual for all of us. If we want to understand certain things, it's good for us to see them in a picture form. And for me, it's very helpful in order to be able to clearly understand certain things. Now, if you remember, and I'm going to focus this, I'm going to fix it a little bit better so you can see it clearly. I want you basically to look at this this evening. You notice, by the way, that in our study of the book of Daniel, we have been introduced, first of all, to chapter 1 was introductory. It was the opening of the book of Daniel, shows us the condition that existed among the people of Judah, how Nebuchadnezzar came and took the Jewish people down to Babylon. He came three times, and the last time he destroyed and burned the temple and destroyed the city of Jerusalem completely. Now we also started in chapter 2, which is very, very important here. And I'm showing you this now, the whole chart, so you can get a grasp of it. In chapter 2, we have seen the great image. And you remember that great image, it was an interesting thing, is because that particular dream was not given to Daniel. To Daniel was given the interpretation, but the dream was given to Nebuchadnezzar. And really, chapter 2 tells us, if you notice here, the times of the Gentiles. And the chapter 2 took us over the whole period of the time of the Gentile, beginning from taking away the scepter, if you will, from the Jewish people. The Jewish people have gone to Babylon, and ending up at the second coming of the Messiah himself. And when the Messiah, the stone that fell upon the toes, if you remember, is the second coming of the Messiah. So it's given us an overview over the whole times of the Gentiles. But if you notice, by the way, it was looked at from a human perspective. Because when Nebuchadnezzar has seen the vision, what does he see? A vision of the greatness of the times of the Gentiles. If you will, he looks at a great image: gold, silver, and bronze, and eventually iron and clay. And he looks at, he sees an image. And if you remember, in chapter 3, what did he do? He built a great image, a greatness of this empire, making it really the greatness of himself. And so by the time we have studied this time of the Gentiles in chapter 2, we looked at this from human perspective. In other words, men look at the time of the Gentiles and see the greatness of the time of the Gentiles. All these empires, the Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire, and ultimately the Roman Empire.
Then we study, of course, chapter 4, and we saw how Nebuchadnezzar, of course, became the testimony of Nebuchadnezzar. He became like an animal, and finally he has been restored and received the kingdom of again. And then, of course, we study chapter 5 with the Belshazzar and how Belshazzar had ended up in his death and the taking over of the Babylonian by the Medo-Persian, and the Medo-Persian became the next kingdom. But it is interesting, by the time we get to chapter 7, really, chapter 7 is really ought to be inserted, not really after chapter 6 in a chronological way. It should really fit between chapter 4 and chapter 5. In fact, what we find out is that in chapter 4, after Nebuchadnezzar had ended, you see, you notice that you have already the Medo-Persian in chapter 5. But really, you notice that in between chapter 4 and chapter 5, there we should really begin in chapter 7. That's where it fits in a chronological way. Notice chapter 7, where we read this evening in verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. In the first year, when he began to reign as the king of Babylon. So really, chapter 7 fit in between chapter 4 and chapter 5 of the book of Daniel, chronologically. Okay, now, I've shown you this chart. Oh, by the way, before I'll take this chart away, you notice now in chapter 7, it really deals with the same point of the time of the Gentiles, but instead of looking at this from human perspective, from here, from man's side upward, we're looking at this from God's side downwards. While men look at a great image, God sees four beasts. While men look at the greatness of his accomplishment, God looks from heaven. What does he see? He sees four beasts and the kingdom, again, the time of the Gentiles in this chapter 7. You see, it's really go parallel with chapter 2. Chapter 7 go parallel with chapter 2. And every beast that we see here in this particular chapter represent in the same parallel what chapter 2 represented. The Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Grecians, the Romans, the revived Roman Empire, and finally, the coming of the Messiah himself to receive a kingdom for himself. Okay, now just for a second, to make a little closer picture, so we can just make sure that we got it. Here it is, the image. That's what we have seen in chapter 2. The image, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, the second coming of the Messiah in power to take control over the affairs of this world. Today, of course, we begin the study of chapter 7, which present before us the four kingdoms looked at from divine side, from God looking down. And what does he see? He see the four kingdoms and its beastly description, if you will, in the reality of how does God describe those four kingdoms in the time of the Gentiles. So, just to make a good important point for us, to there is a little parallel between those two chapters that we have been speaking about, chapter 2 and chapter 7. What is the similarity? Let's just look at that. In chapter 2, the dream had been received by Nebuchadnezzar himself. In chapter 7, the dream had been received from God by Daniel, not Nebuchadnezzar. In chapter 2, the interpreter of the dream was Daniel. In chapter 7, we're going to see the interpreter would be an angel. In chapter 2, we have looking at things at the time of the Gentile from man's side, human perspective. In chapter 7, we are looking at the same time of the Gentiles from a divine point of view. So you can see the parallel between those two
chapters. Now, let's continue now. I want to suggest that chapter 7 divide itself into two sections. Verses 1 to 14 is the dream and the visions. Notice it's a dream singular, visions plural. Chapter 7 verses 15 to the end is basically is the interpretation of this particular dream and visions. Yeah. Chapter 2 is really looking at things from a human perspective, chapter 7 from divine perspective, chapter 7 from divine perspective. Now, today we are going to deal with the first half of this chapter if we succeed to finish it. If not, we'll carry on in our next meeting together. So, verses 1 to 14 is the dream and the visions, plural. First of all, we find out the introduction to the visions in verse 1. In verse 1, we read, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, singular, and visions, plural, of his head upon his bed, and he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Just imagine, Daniel, God now was going to give him to see things from God's perspective about the future event. Daniel, a Hebrew, coming down from Judea, living in Babylon. By that time, he must have been over 60 years old. And now God is giving him to see a dream and visions. Daniel, as it says here, he was laying here upon his bed, it says here. And then he received the dream and the visions. And then what did he do? It says here in verse 1, he wrote the dream and he told the sum of the matters. Notice it says the sum of the matters. Perhaps there was a lot more details that he could have written down, but what he told and what he said it told the sum of these particular matters and these dreams and dream and vision that had been given unto him by God. Now, what does he see? In verses 2 to verse 6, he has the first vision. In verse 2 to verse 6, he has the first vision, and notice how interesting. First of all, in verses 2 and 3, what does he see? He sees the great sea. And apparently, the sea was agitated. Notice it says here in verse 2, and Daniel spake and he said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. And then verse 3, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. Now just think for a second how interesting it is. He's laying down, he's receiving this dream and visions. And what does he see? He received from God, he saw the four winds of heaven striving together. What does he see? He see like an agitation. He see all kind of turmoil and problems. And what does this the winds do? It's striving upon the great sea. This expression, the great sea, in the Bible, in a literal way, has a reference to the Mediterranean Sea. When you think about the great sea in the scriptures, it has a reference to the Mediterranean Sea. And if you know Israel, in the north we have Syria, in the south we have Egypt, in the east you have Jordan, and in the west you have what you call the Mediterranean Sea. It's called in the scriptures it's called the Great Sea. See, and I want to give you some verses to prove it. If you just leave your finger here and go to the book of Numbers. Go to the book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 34. Some of the borders, you know, Numbers 34 gives us the borders of Canaan. God had given to the people of Israel a promise of a land that he is going to provide for the nation of Israel, and Israel was going to enter into this land and it's a land flowing with milk and honey. Of course, the reason that they haven't enjoyed that land yet fully is because of disobedience, and God had eventually to cause the diaspora and the Jewish people are dispersed, waiting for the day when they are going to be restored in the second coming of the Messiah. But notice what it says in Numbers chapter 34, and it's verse 6. Numbers chapter 34 and verse 6 and 7. And for the western border, ye shall have the great sea. Notice this expression, the great sea for a border. This shall be your border, and this shall be your north border. From the great sea, ye shall point out for you Mount Hor. Now, just this expression, the great sea, it has to do with the Mediterranean Sea. If you think about the land that God had given to Israel, the Great Sea has a reference to the Mediterranean Sea. Turn to the book of Joshua now, chapter 1. Joshua, Judges, Joshua chapter 1. And verse, Joshua chapter 1, and verse 3 and 4. God saying to Joshua, Joshua 1, verses 3 and 4. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness of this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river of Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and listen, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coasts. And so you see the great sea, when you read it today, you look at the map today, has a reference to the Mediterranean Sea. That is the vision that Daniel sees. What does he see? The Mediterranean Sea, if you will, is being in agitation. And so it is interesting in chapter 7 verse 2, Daniel spake, and he said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea. And there was striving. You know that there was striving. It seems to be that there is a chaotic situation. It seems to be that there is a striving situation. And so, out of this great sea, what is this symbolically speaking to us? Because not only physically, if the great sea speak of the Mediterranean Sea that God had given to the people of Israel, in a spiritual way, the sea in the scripture often has a picture or a spiritual lesson which is speak to us of the nation, the Gentile nations of the world. And you'll notice how clear it is as we're going to read some other passages, but every time in the scriptures it has a reference to the sea in scripture, oftentimes it has a reference to the Gentile nations of the world. And I give you an example that, again, put your finger here and go to the prophet Isaiah now in chapter 17. Isaiah chapter 17, we'll make some references here and there so we can see the connection. Isaiah 17 verse 12 and 13. Isaiah 17 verses 12 and 13. Woe to the multitude of many people, which make a noise like the noise of the seas, and to the rushing of nations that make a rushing like the rushing of mighty waters. Notice how God in the scripture make a reference to the seas, has a reference to the sea has a reference to the many people and to the many nations like the mighty rivers. Daniel, of course, laying in his bed, receiving a vision from God, the visions from God, what does he see? The sea agitated, and out of this sea, which represent the Gentile nations, coming four beasts. Four beasts out. Notice, I'm back in Daniel. And by the way, if you want some more references to the sea that speak of nations, Matthew chapter 13, verses 47 to 50. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. And Revelation chapter 17, verses 1 and 15. That has a reference to many nations. In fact, you know what? I just want to read that last passage in Revelation. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea. And I saw the beast rise out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. Upon the horns, upon his horns, ten crowns. And upon his heads, the names of blasphemy. In chapter 13 and verse 1 has to do with that beast that we're going to get to talk about it later on, that's rising out of the sea. Again, out of the nations of the world. And so, in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 3 now, out of this sea, what does he see? He sees four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. What does he see? Coming out of the sea, four animals or four beasts coming out. Everyone was different. And he says here it was great. It was a very unique kind of beasts. Very unique. And out of that sea, out of the, symbolically and spiritually, what we learn here, that out of the Gentile nations, he's looking and he sees coming out of the sea, coming out of the Gentile nations, coming four beasts, diverse one from another. Then notice now, he began to give us a description of every one of these animals, every one of these beasts, these beasts that he received from God in the visions that he has seen. Notice, first of all, in verse 4, the first beast that he saw is, notice, like, and I want you to look also at the picture here. The first beast that he sees in chapter 7 is found in verse 4. And it says in verse 4, the first was like a lion. And the eagles, he had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. So really, when you think about it, first of all, the lions oftentimes in the scripture represented the Babylonian kingdom. And you notice that this particular lion, what does he have? He has those two wings we read here in verse 4. He has these eagle's wings, and it would speak to us of the swiftness in which the Babylonian have taken over the rule over this world. In a swiftness, these wings really will represent the swiftness, how fast that the Babylonian have taken a possession over the world, and they become this first empire. But it says here in verse 4, I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. And it's interesting that it had been suggested that after the experience that Nebuchadnezzar had with the judgment that God had to judge him, to teach him lessons, not to be proud and say that, oh, is not this great Babylon which I have made for myself. After this lesson, the Babylonian kingdom became less, if you will, aggressive. In the beginning, they began swiftly, in much power, took control, aggressive. But then later on, if you will, Nebuchadnezzar humiliation, they became less, if you will, aggressive. It says here in verse 4, these wings have been plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth, and he was made to stand upon the feet as a man, and man's heart was given unto him.
or he became more humane, dealing with the with those who were under their authority with a lot easier way, rather than the way it was in the beginning. So the first beast looked like a lion, two wings on its back, which really would speak to us of the Babylonian kingdom, beginning, of course, with Nebuchadnezzar. Secondly, now, notice in verse 5. Verse 5 is the second beast. The second beast, and I want you to notice, it says, "Behold, I beheld another beast, a second, like to a bear this time." But there's an interesting thing about that bear. It says here in verse 5, "And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh." If the first beast will represent for us, of course, the kingdom of Babylon, the second beast will represent to us the kingdom of the Medes and the Persian. If you remember in chapter 2, it represented, the Medo-Persian were represented by the chest and the two hands. It was a partnership kingdom. It was a together between the Medes and the Persians together. And here what we see in the bear, that the bear was being lifted up two, on one side a little bit higher than the other side. That's what verse 5 said. The bear, it raised up itself on one side. And that will really represent to us, again, while there were the Medes and the Persians had a partnership kingdom, it was really the Persian who had a little, if you will, a little higher authority, Cyrus and so on, over the Medes. And therefore you can see that there is the Medes and the Persian are being represented here with the bear. Notice, by the way, that it says here about the bear in verse 5, that in his mouth were three ribs. Those ribs were really, it's a remains of the food that they have already devoured. And it says here, between his teeth he had it, and they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. And it had been said that the Medes and the Persians, they have, of course, took over Babylon, and in addition to that, Lydia and Egypt, and by doing so, they have become that second empire. The three ribs will represent really the three great nations that they have devoured and took over and became the second kingdom after the Babylonian. So we have the Babylonian represented by the lion, and we have the Medes and the Persians, the Medo-Persia, which represent by the bear, leaning a little bit more higher than on one side, because the Persian nation, if you will, were a little bit more powerful than the Medes. But it was a partnership, a kingdom. Then in verse 6, we see the third beast. In verse 6, and I'm reading, what we see, "After this, I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard this time, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it." Now, this is also very interesting. And remember, when we have studied the image in chapter 2, we said that the thighs, the belly and the thighs, represented the Grecians. And the Greek, of course, empire, being, of course, started by, Alexander the Great, is the one that is being, the one who have took control. And you know, notice the leopard, his swiftness, the way he had been taking over. And it had been said about Alexander that he, when he died, he was a very young man, around 32 years old. He was so discouraged with the fact that he could not take more. And he could not conquer even more. And so it really represent these four wings, really represent the double the speed of what we saw it in the lion, which has with the Babylonian. And we can see that it really would speak to us now of the Grecian Empire. The Grecian Empire. And by the way, you notice he had also four heads. When Alexander died, his captains, if you will, those that that have been his generals, the four generals, have taken over and divided the Grecian kingdom into the north, south, east, and west. In other words, the four heads will really represent the divisions of the Grecian empire into these four sections. What we see here in verses 2 to 6, we have the first vision, if you will, and what does he see? The great sea, the first beast, the lion, the second beast, the bear, the third beast, the leopard, which represents the Grecian Empire. So, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, and the Grecian represented by those three beasts. Now, for a minute, please, just turn to a verse in the book of Psalm. I want to read Psalm 49, a verse that I have my before me. Psalm 49 and verse 12. Verse 12, nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. Psalm 49, verse 12. Man being in honor abideth not, he is like the beasts that perish. You know, when we think about those kingdoms that we have been already speaking about in chapter 2, men being in honor, the best of men and the best of kingdoms and the best of powers in this world, the scripture says he is like the beasts that eventually perish. And this is exactly what happened when we look at the history of those kingdoms. When the next kingdom came, their kingdom statues have ended and they mingle and become part, interwoven with the next kingdom. And with the next kingdom. And ultimately, we're going to see that it's going to lead eventually into the second coming of the Messiah of Israel, Yeshua, the Messiah himself, which will take the kingdom, which will never end, will never end. But men being in honor abideth not or endure not, does not endure, he is like the beasts that perish. Okay, so we have covered the first vision, verses 2 to 6, and now we're going to go to the next vision in verse 7 and 8. And that is very interesting. In verse 7 and 8, let me read those two verses, we see the second vision. After this I saw, notice, after you've seen those agitated sea, Gentile nations, the three beasts, the lion, the bear, and the leopard, Babylon, Medo-Persian, and Greece. Then he says in verse 7, after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and break in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Now pause with me for a minute. This is interesting. You notice what he says now in verse 7 and 8. First of all, he shows us in verse 7 the fourth beast. What does he say? First of all, this beast, he does not give it even a name. The other three, lion, bear, leopard. But when it's come to the fourth beast, it's what we call it, and a beast which has only the description, but without a name. In fact, you notice the way he says it in verse 7, I saw in the night visions, and behold, the fourth beast, dreadful and terrible. That's what he called that beast. Dreadful and terrible. If you go just down a little bit in verse 7, he said it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. These two expressions that he say gives to this fourth beast, he doesn't give it a name. In fact, as you see the picture, and you can see it later on in the interpretation of the dream, it has some characteristics of each of the other animals, beasts that there had been before. But he does not give it a name. All what he said, it is a dreadful and a terrible beast. And in verse 7, he continues in the bottom of this verse, it was diverse from all the other beasts. It was a different animal. But one thing for sure, it is dreadful and it is terrible. Again, I want to remind you from our perspective, looking at it from today, knowing from what we have studied already in chapter 2, we know that the fourth kingdom that followed after the Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Grecian, was the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire. In fact, we know very well, when the Messiah came in his first coming, Israel was under the occupation of the Roman Empire. And what we learn from this now, that it gives us a description of this particular kingdom. It was dreadful, it was terrible, but we see here that there are various stages that existing in this particular Roman Empire, this particular fourth beast, the Roman Empire. There are various stages. Listen to those particular stages. We have them in verses 7 and verse 8. It's called a non-descriptive beast. And it is no name, speak of the Roman Empire, dreadful and terrible. Verse 7 tells us two of the stages of the Roman Empire. First of all, it's historic, one of them, and the next one is a future from our point of view. Notice it says in verse 7, it says, this beast, the fourth beast, was dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had a great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the other beasts. That represent from looking back at the history of the Roman Empire, we know that in chapter 2 it was represented by the iron. And it really represents what we can say, it is a devouring stage. It was stage in the historically where the Roman Empire was really devouring the strength of the Roman Empire, the cruelty that have existed in the early, if you will, in the beginning of the Roman Empire, looking back from our point of view. And so if you look at this particular fourth beast will express and will develop with more than one stage. More than one stage. We'll see it also in the interpretation when we're going to get to it at the end, the second half of chapter 7. So in the beginning we see it, we can call it a devour stage. A stage where this Roman Empire had been hard and strong like iron and devouring. He says like it had great iron teeth. You know, that's speak, you know, when you think about iron teeth, I don't know about you, but I don't have an iron teeth. I have too many cavities in my teeth. But can you imagine iron teeth suggest of you know, biting hard and just chewing until with an iron teeth. And then it says devouring, breaking in pieces, and stamp the residue with the feet of it. In other words, when you think about it, it is a devouring stage. Devouring stage. Looking back from our point of view, from our time. But notice now, it also takes us to another stage, and we can call it in verse 7 at the end, and it had 10 horns. 10 horns. Now you ask many Bible teachers today, and they will oftentimes will speak about the European Union. And they were speaking about the 10, you remember the union of the 10 European nations united together. But unfortunately, when you look today, there are many more that have joined. I think they have already 15, and there are others who are going to be joined to them yet. And in other words, it still have never been in the history of the Roman Empire or the revived Roman Empire. Those 10, if you will, 10 kingdoms are yet as divided into 10 kingdoms. They have many more, and it takes us perhaps into much more than merely the European nation, but a worldwide, if you will, nations which will be divided itself into 10 kingdoms. How do I know that the 10 horns represent 10 kingdoms? Look at the same chapter 7, verse 24. Why do I say that the 10 horns represent 10 kings or 10 kingdoms? Look at verse 24. It gives us, the Bible interprets itself. In verse 24 it says, and the 10 horn out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise. You see, so 10 horns represent 10 kings, but even more than just 10 kings, 10 kingdoms. Because kings and kingdom in the book of Daniel are coincide with each other. It may be more than one particular king for a kingdom. For example, the kingdom of Babylon had more than one king. If you remember, we started with Nebuchadnezzar, and we ended up with Belshazzar in the kingdom of the Babylonian. But there were more in between. And so when it says in Daniel chapter 7, when it speaks about the 10 horns, in verse 24, it helps us to understand that those 10 horns really represent 10 kingdoms. And by the way, there's going to be 10 kingdoms which will exist at the same time. So, Daniel chapter 7, verse 7 has the two stages. Stage number one, devouring stage, that's the past. Stage number two, 10 horn, 10 kingdom stage, taking us to the future as far as we are concerned. In other words, what does this tell us? That this particular non-descriptive beasts will have various stages. And so, if you remember, it had stopped for a while, or at least divided for a while, and not longer functioning in the same way like in the past, but is going to be revived and functioning again. We see it in this image. We see it very clearly here on the image. You notice this image here? We have the Roman Empire start, the beginning of it, but then we have the present day age of the church age in which we live in today. So the Roman or the revive Roman Empire going to have to revive after the rapture of the church, when the church is not going to be here, if you will, then there will be that revived Roman Empire, and specifically I'm speaking about the 7 year of tribulation. After the believers of this present day, the church age, going to be taken out of here, the Roman Empire will be revived, and at the end of the final Roman Empire, notice by the way we saw here the 10 toes, and the 10 toes in the image also represented 10 kingdoms, which will exist at the time of the tribulation period. And so you can see the similarity, this particular a beast had 10 horns on its head. Now, I'm going to show you another slide that you can kind of understand it. You notice now the next one, what we see, the Roman Empire. Now, you only see here at this moment 8 horns, and I'm going to show you why. Because there is another stage in the Roman Empire. Notice now, verse 8 of Daniel chapter 7 give us the third stage, and we can call that the little horn stage. The little horn stage. Let me read verse 8. Romans 7 and verse 8. I consider the horns,
And them and, the, and behold, there came up among them another little horn. Now, let me make you a calculation. 10 plus 1 is 11, right? 10 plus 1 is 11. In other words, there were 10 kingdoms, 10 kings, and there was another king that rose. It called the little horn. We're going to talk a lot about this little horn. This little horn, of course, represents to us the Antichrist, the counterfeit Messiah, which will arise at that particular time. It says here, another little horn, before whom, notice, there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. In other words, if there were 10 plus the 1 is 11, three of them have been plucked out by the roots. He killed them, he destroyed them. He remained, so there are 7 plus the 1 makes it 8. Very clear. Now, we just to see the parallel, it is interesting here in this slide again, what we see. Chapter 2, the revived Roman Empire, the 10 toes, and the second coming of the Messiah. Chapter 7, the revived Roman Empire, here it is, the little horn eventually destroying three, plucking them out of the roots, and he remaining plus the 7 makes it 8. Now, In the second vision that Daniel has seen, what does he see? In verse 7, the fourth beast, which had three stages. Stage number 1, devouring stage, history. Stage number 2, the 10 horn stage, future. Stage number 5, the little horn stage, future. Okay? Now, back to Daniel chapter 7, and then verses 9 to 12. The third vision that Daniel is seeing. Remember, he sees visions. Now, in verses 9 to 12, we have the third vision. And Daniel now is really, the story is shift from earth to heaven, from the sea to the court of the holy God in heaven. So now there is a shift in the scene. Scene number 1, agitated sea, 4 animals, 4 beasts, lion, bear, leopard, and the non-descriptive animal beast, which is the final beast, which three stages, Roman Empire, a devouring stage, ten kingdom stage, and the little horn stage. Now we're shifting from a scene on earth to a scene in heaven. Verse 9 and 10, what does he see first of all? The first thing that he sees the Ancient of Days. And I'm reading. And I beheld till the thrones. By the way, I should stop here for a second. This is very important. I don't want to miss on it. In verse 8, there's two things that I haven't said on verse 8. I apologize. In verse 8, it says, after it speak about this little horn, that it plucked three by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and the mouth speaking great things. Now this little horn, apparently, we see two things here. His eyes, it says here that he had the eyes like a man. And it's really speak about human intelligence. He was a man. His eyes like the eyes of a man. This really represent us a man. It's really represent to us the future counterfeit Messiah, that his eyes, as it says here, is the eyes like eyes of a man, of men. But notice it says that he has a mouth speaking great things. Now that is not great things in a sense of good things, but he was speaking, he was blaspheming and speaking against God and then again against God's people and God's temple. Just to turn, please, for a verse, I would like to read a verse in the book of Revelation for a minute, chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 5 speaking about this beast, the counterfeit Messiah. In verse 5 and 6 it says, "And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue for 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven." And you see, so what we see here, that beast of Revelation chapter 13, verses 5 and 6, is the same little horn that we see him in Daniel chapter 7. He has eyes like a man, and a mouth speaking great things of blasphemy against God, God's tabernacle, and God's people. That is the way the counterfeit Messiah, this evil man who will rise up in the future day, he will speak against God. He had a mouth speaking great things. So now, it shifts from the sea to heaven. And in verses 9 to 12, it's the third vision. First of all, we see in verses 9 and 10, the Ancient of Days. In verse 9, "And I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like a pure wool. His throne was like a fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000,000 ministered unto him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set and the books were opened." So now we see a shift, and we see the throne of God. God the Father is sitting. We call him, we know it's called here the Ancient of Days. And so what Daniel sees is now God is sitting on the judgment seat to judge. And remember, it is not here the great white throne judgment. The great white throne judgment of Revelation chapter 20 comes later, after the millennial age. And the great white throne judgment comes upon every person who, the judgment is going to come upon every person who haven't accepted the Messiah, and he's going to be cast, he or she going to be cast into the lake of fire for eternal separation from God. But here it is the judgment in the tribulation period that God is ready to pour upon the Gentile nations by, in a sense, it is with how they have treated the nation of Israel. In particular, in the tribulation period. And so what we see here, that God, the Ancient of Days, sitting down, he was sitting, whose garment was white as snow. That is a representation of its purity. He can see all things. He is holy. He is pure. Garments white. It's also said, his hair, the hair of his head was like pure wool. And you know, again, we can just imagine, we looked at it in the book of Revelation when we studied it, but it's like the hair would speak to us also of his purity and holiness, and if you will, the fact that he is Ancient of Days, he can see through and through, from everlasting to everlasting, he is God. Then we also see that his head was like pure wool, and that this throne was like a fiery flame. And his wheels are burning as burning fire. In other words, the throne and the wheels will really represent to us, speaking about the fiery flame, representing the fact that the devouring fire of God's holiness to judge those nations and how they have behaved in the time that God had given them responsibility. And so in verses 9, we see the Ancient of Days. By the way, you notice that in verse 10 it said that the fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000,000 ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him, and judgment was set, and the books were opened. In other words, he was ready to sit now and to judge. The books are being opened to him, before him, and he is now ready to judge those particular nations.
in context, beloved brothers and sisters, here it is, the judgment of God against the Gentile world in the tribulation period. It's the judgment of God against the Gentile world in the tribulation period. The judgments are ready, as it says here, and the books are being opened. Now, I'm looking at the clock and I see that our time is up for today. But just studying up to now from verses 1 to verse 10, what we learn is that we see that there is a progress here in the visions that God had given Daniel to take him up till the point of the time from the Babylonian, Medo-Persian, the Grecians, the Romans, the revived Roman Empire, and finally the Antichrist, which is represented by this little horn, and ultimately the God is ready to judge those nations in this particular time of the tribulation period. We're going to close with one verse. If you turn, please, to the prophet Isaiah now. In fact, Zechariah, not Isaiah. Zechariah chapter 12. Not back, forward. Zechariah chapter 12. Zechariah chapter 12, and I'm just going to read one or two verses there. In context, he see the judgment being ready, books being open, and the Ancient of Days sitting on his throne, ready to judge. The place of him ready to judge in order, it was after the little horn had risen up. And that suggests to us that it will speak to us about not the great white throne judgment, it is a time of the tribulation period, the 7 years, during those particular 7 years. And some may even say Matthew 25 will suggest at the end of this. But I just want to read one or two verses here. In chapter 12 of Zechariah, in verse 8 and 9, we read this. In that day, shall the Lord defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem? And he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as God, and the angel of the Lord before them. And verse 9. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem.
Did he, what was that first one, the one before you read?
Zechariah,
yeah.
Chapter 12,
yeah.
And verse 8 and 9. Zechariah, chapter 12, verses 8 and 9. And so, when we see God is sitting on his throne, when we see the books are being opened, we read in verse 10 of our chapter, the 10,000 times 10,000. It says here in our verses that they have fallen before him. They stood before him. Thousands upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set and the books were open. And when you think about those numbers, I've calculated 10,000 times 10,000 is 100 million. And if you connect this with Revelation chapter 5 and verse 11, you can see the redeemed and the angelic beings who are surrounding the throne, worshiping God and honoring him. And the Ancient of Days is sitting there ready to judge. And so we didn't finish the first half of Daniel chapter 7. We'll continue this in our next meeting together. But just, beloved, just think about what a beautiful lesson we learn from those two chapters in what we have seen in these four beasts represent the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Grecians, and the Romans, and its stages, past and future, ten horn and little horn,
in the tribulation period. Next time when we're going to come together, we're going to finish this and go into the interpretation of the dream.